Accession number 14749, Real 1.
Mrs. Mack, Real 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Silesia, Upper Silesia, in Germany, about 9 miles from the Polish border.
Was this in a village?
Well, my father was had retired. It was a very large town, and on his retirement he moved about 30 miles away in a very small, very old, ancient, nice town called Tost.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a chartered accountant.
Did you go to school in the same place that you were born in?
In both places. Before he retired for 2 years, and the rest of this place where my father retired to, in Tost.
Your name was Maciejczyk. Yes. Did you speak German or Polish at
all? Only German.
And how old were you when you left school?
15. 15, counselor school, but I went to a college for another 2 years.
Was the population in this part of Upper Silesia purely German, or was it mixed?
Well, I should think in the surrounding villages, some of the farmers had Polish extraction, because some of them did speak. They all spoke German, but they could also speak Polish. But in towns, I've never encountered anybody at all in my lifetime speaking Polish.
Were any of those people who could also speak Polish people who wanted to be part of Poland?
I do not know. I do not really know, because this part of Silesia has never been, not as far as I remember, for 200 years under Frederick the Great, because I know the history quite well. It has never been Polish. I can only imagine, like so often, perhaps even on the French side, when I think of the Saargebiet, that people coming over and going over, and a lot of Poles might have settled there, the Polish people. I can only imagine, but I wouldn't really know for certain.
Do you remember the outbreak of the war? What were your personal reminiscences of that?
I do exactly that day, because I was sitting on a step when I hear the news. And that comes now, this is something very different to, shall I say, my upbringing during the Hitler time. Because although I stopped going to school, I was 14 in 38, for 1 year after we left school, every boy and girl had to have 1 year either in a household with the girls or the boys on the land before they actually could go on to college. They had to. That was a break, and we all had to. And I was looking after one child. I went into a family daytime during the daytime, and I looked after a little boy for a whole year and continued after that year, 2 years in college later on. So, yes, I do remember that very well, because I was sitting on the steps of this lady's house, and there was the news coming on, and he was saying that. It didn't mean a great deal to us in those days, because we were very remote, actually, from the rest of it. It was very quiet, very rural, very non-political, or apolitical, should I say. Everybody was actually sort of not very fussed about political things. It was so far removed from all the political things. We were very quiet. And not even, if I say Hitler and all the rest of it, that sort of seemed to bypass us. Nobody got excited, nothing. It was very rural, very quiet. Right down to 44, actually, we were extremely bypassing almost the war, you know, and all the, what it brought along. And So
was there no political presence or political parties?
Oh, it was,
in the
but
area?
It was very, very. I can only imagine, looking back, and also perhaps when I was still there, that part of Silesia and that east, the east, is very Catholic, and they're very strict Catholics, like the Poles actually are. Perhaps it's, I don't know how, why, but they were much more religious, and for some reason or the other, politics came very little in it. Even in school, we learned the dates, whatever happened in Berlin or anywhere else, but it didn't really affect us very much. We were very quiet down there. We I do not know why, but it was right down when I think back and we talked with my sisters. It sort of didn't affect us very much. There was no excitement, no nothing. We led our lives like almost be like before a war. Very quiet.
Did you come from a Catholic family yourself?
Yes, I am. Yes, most of us were Catholic. Yes, I am a Catholic.
So, when the war broke out, did it have any effect on your life?
Not really. In fact, we were quite well off from the rest of the country. Say, for instance, my friends and school friends, the girls, say, for instance, they got jobs then. They went into shops. And when we were rationed, we were extremely well off. Perhaps we were, I'm talking now because we had relatives in towns which were very badly off, as the time went on, food-wise in particular and everything, which we never did. But these girls were in shops, and so they knew us, and they gave us something extra. But we also were actually, because perhaps we were so rural, there was a lot, we never want for anything. We got absolutely, we had no hardship, shall I say. We, our particular little area, I can only talk from, you know, where I was working and going to school, working afterwards. We never had any hardship. In fact, my mother used to send her ration cards to my aunt in Berlin, who was extremely badly off, because, as I say, partly perhaps because of the girls that, oh, there's enough here, we give it to you because we know you, we went to school together. And we had almost in any shop, we had school friends. And we were really very quiet down there, and very well off from that point of view. We really didn't want for anything, not much, shall I say. Clothing and all the rest of it, that became gradually less as the time went on. But food-wise, we were right. But also, when, after my 2 years at college, I went to bookkeeping, shorthand and typing and bookkeeping course for 2 years at college. And my first and only job I had there until I left, was in an agriculture college. And here again, that was rather lucky, in a way, because I made all these contacts with the farmers who came along, wanted machinery and things which were actually on vouchers. So here again, they all came. As well, I shouldn't say that, but it just happened. They came and they wrote me butter and they wrote me poultry and goodness knows, they just came along and brought those things. So therefore, perhaps we were particularly lucky, perhaps, and even more. But as I say, most of our friends and so in that town, we all were very lucky food-wise. There's no doubt about it.
What about other kind of rations, like clothing rations?
Well, that eventually became less. We still had it, but we didn't need it so much because, again, I can't say. My mother was very good. She was a very good needlewoman. She made things smaller. We were quite a big, not family, we were four children, but friends and so on. We always had handed down things, so we never wanted really anything from that point of view. We were very good, really, during the war. I know sometimes we had to make do, and my mother made from two dresses one, you know, like that, but it was very seldom. We were all right, funny enough.
What was the general attitude towards the National Socialist regime in your area? How did people regard it?
You see, that's when I think it became, that was the very Catholic stronghold. So for some reason or the other, Catholicism or religion came into it. When you think of Poland today and after the war, and they couldn't do much to them because they were so Catholics. And I think that partly was there too, because the priest was still the person around there who had a lot to say. And even the director of my school, he was in the SR, which was something unusual. But he never made the point that he was radical. He was just as normal as anybody else. And also when I went to my first job, now he was director, was something very high up in a party. But absolutely no, as I say, no, everything went smoothly. There was absolutely no radical excitement and, you know, what should I say, nastiness about it. It absolutely wasn't there with us. And I often think about it and I often wondered why, but perhaps because we were out in the country and we were so quiet. But all my, as I say, from school director to my, perhaps, shall I say, my employer, they had to belong to the party. Now, that's another thing. A lot of people belong to the party because they had to, but only people in places, say, for instance, in a whatever their job took them to. But the rest wasn't. And so and we could still get away with it. That's another thing is, so many people said they didn't want to, and there was no pressure. And that made us wonder whether it was much more dominant in towns, so in different areas where perhaps more in the right itself. We were, if you see, you know, Silesia, it was just sticking out. It's that little piece that sticks out. So whether it had something to do that there were more people, more propaganda. But as with us, the propaganda was practically nil.
Did the children have to join the National Socialist Youth Movement?
Only if you wanted to. There was no pressure. I never belonged. My sister didn't belong to it. And my brother was taken into the Navy in 1942, so he was out. But my sister, I believe, who was a kindergarten, when was it, about 43, 44. And as we had invaded Poland then, they took some of our girls, men, or whoever it was, into Poland to organize or any jobs. And now they put her into a village, in fact, to two villages, from what she said, because I wasn't much in contact with my sister after that. And they pressured her into, she has to have this very good job, very highly paid job, but she has to join the movement, which she refused. So what they have done with her, they have put her into a village, sort of miles out of, from anywhere, absolutely anywhere. And it was practically, it was such a rotten place. And they made her do something very nice of this village in a kindergarten, up to date, with very little help, with nothing. And she said, well, right, you don't join it. Now you do your best and see what you can do. And she did. She's always been a very good, from that point of view. She's very artistic and she's very devoted to children. And she made it very good after that job for a year. And then he took it away and did the same thing to her. And he asked her again the question, will you join? And she said no. And they did the same thing to her. And after that, I think it came down to 44 when nobody cared anymore in any case. But she was the only one who was pressurized. Now, I was in, when I had this job in Agriculture College, and my employer was something very, I think he was something to do under Gau, or something very high up. But he never, ever pressurized the teachers who were under his command, nothing. He was a very kind man, in fact. He had five children. We saw him seldom in uniform. He had two jobs. He was actually the director of this college. And then he was something very high up in the party, which has sort of taken a lot of his time too. But we were never pressurized into anything, not with him. And then we came up to 44. Never, never anything. It was very quiet. None of the teachers were in a party. There were about three or four whom I knew quite well. Two ladies and I think three men. And we still could, sometimes, I don't really know why some places could be bypassed like that, even people, teachers and directors. And we weren't pressurized in some ways. It wasn't so with us. It wasn't actually saying you have to, otherwise you lose your job. I can't remember anybody who did. Sometimes I have heard through my father that he said, oh, they wanted him to join the party. And he said, no, and that was it, finished. If you don't want to join the party, you don't. So I don't know, but sometimes I do think, because it was so Catholic, that it were still perhaps, I don't know, they hadn't gone down to the level of saying was to be a radical. They were still Catholics, or they were saying, oh, well, we'll deal with the others first and you later. I do not really know, but whether it was with us, we were very, very quiet.
Did your father and sister refuse to join because they were hostile to the National Socialist Party?
My father was, very, and my sister very much, both of them, yes. Yes, they led their life, you know, quietly, but if it came to and to something, and there was something actually that did come in, that was the Jews. Now, we had quite a population, it was a very small town, very ancient old town.
Is this Tost?
Tost, yes. There were only two in the east, there's Marienburg and Tost in the south. Very ancient, old. There were only about 4,000, 4,500 people living in there. You still had the old, Burke, what do they call it?
Fortress.
Fortress, yes, and the walls partly. and we were all on a sort of a hill, a semi-hill, and we lived all around it. It was a very, very, very quiet, very nice place, but we had quite a population of Jews. A lot of them had, shops. And suddenly, just a year, I think, was it 37 or 38? And there was really a blitz on those. But there was none of these people from Tost itself. They all came from Berlin. Now, you see, when that's what I heard on one or two occasions. If there was something that sort of went through very quickly and tried to make their mark, there were people from the outside. And these Jews, they were really all gathered up very quickly. And we did hear there wasn't a single, in fact, as we all did know them. So we had really, we were, in fact, I used to have my pocket money twice a week to take our children from a Jewish person. We were all, like we all here. I mean, Jews were Jews. There was no difference. But they were trying to make us believe that the Jews were absolutely horrible. And nobody did believe it. Nobody took any notice. So they gathered them all up. And I did see them gathering them up because, funny enough, I saw them. It was nearly almost outside our house. And there were two big lorries. And they just bundled them all in, absolutely as they were, which we were all standing there crying our hearts out because they were taken from the, you know, with the apron, with the, as it were. They didn't even have the chance to have a coat or something. Sometimes they were just bundling them out and going. And that was sort of about a week of upheaval when they were trying to make us believe that we were really evil, which nobody believed. Nobody did anything. I'm talking about the people who lived there. And so the last sort of 3-4 days later, they just gathered them up and that was the end of it. We never saw them again.
What kind of shops did they run?
They were running clothing shops, jewelry, clothing shops. They never had goods shops, you know, food shops, should I say. No, clothing mostly, yes. And one of those I do remember because we lived on the way to the station and this person whom I took the children out earning my pocket money. And they came very early, and they were actually getting away the week before they were gathered up. And they were trying to make their way to China, I think, and they had a chance. And so they dropped a suitcase with us, saying, would my father keep them until such time when they come back, which, of course, my father put into the cellar. We don't know what was in it. We never saw these people again, so that was the end of it. That was the only family who got sort of away, trying to remember now. A week before it all happened. So whether they had somebody told them that it might happen. So I don't know what it was. The only family I do know had got away before the rounding up of the rest of the Jews.
How old were you when this happened?
Well, I was, when a war broke out, I was 15. I was about 14 years. Yes, it was just a year, sort of a year before. And here again, much later, everything seemed to have become much later. We heard it and read it in a paper, and we heard it on the news that it happened, and we were sort of the last ones to go. We were always the last ones, perhaps because we were so far out, I don't know, really.
Did you know of any non-Jews who disappeared?
No, I don't. Except we heard, but I do not know that from my father, who was deeply religious, and that's, I think that's why he was so very much opposed to that regime. One or two priests that had been sent to concentration camps. But concentration camps was a very hush-hush word. And we didn't believe it in those days before the war. We didn't actually hear what, you know, there was such a, we didn't know what it was. But I think it must have been during the war then, because priests and Catholics have taken in some of the priests and some of the Catholic, perhaps Protestants as well, I do not know. But we heard of definitely two, not from our place, but we heard of two who were occasional visitors to our church, that they had been taken, but they were released. Again, after some months, they were released. That's what we heard, too. But I can't think of any other person who went to a concentration camp and back again. I don't know about the concentration camp things. It's in a way, sometimes it's a bit of a sting, perhaps being a German, when after the war, and perhaps even today, when they were saying, oh, the Germans did know about a concentration camp, and when they try to say they didn't, but it's true. Oh, we didn't really. Not as far as I know. We didn't really know anything. If somebody said, perhaps grown-ups, it was so hush-hush. Nobody knew what a concentration camp was, who, you know, in general. But I tell you something rather funny. I was doing my job. It must have been 43, 44. In one of these farmers, who lived quite a way away, sort of about 12 miles away, and he said to me, he was a fruit grower, and he said, well, why don't you come on Saturday and bring two baskets and get as much cherries and strawberries, he had, get as much strawberries and cherries as you can, and come for dinner and have a nice day out. So I went to Oderberg, which is quite a way away, as I say, and now you would probably wouldn't know, but in Silesia, there is sort of a pilgrimage called Saint Annaberg. That's the only one for miles around. Silesia is very flat, and that's the only little hill. As far as your eye can see, there's a tiny little hill, very low, really, but the only hill there is. And it's a pilgrimage. And so anyhow, we were on the other side. We lived on that side, say, for instance, and the farmer lived on the other side. So I got by train to this farm. I picked up all the strawberries and all the cherries I could, had a lovely meal, had a lovely day out. It was a gorgeous day. And as I was making my way to the station, the last train had gone. It was about 8 o'clock. There was no more train. So I thought, oh, I have to go the 10 miles over the hill and get the train home from over the hill. So anyhow, I trudged along with these two great big baskets, and I came to the bottom of the hill, which was wooded. And I remember my sandal came off, and so I just walked with one shoe on. I was very tired. And I had just gone up to the first few steps, and suddenly a couple of young men in civilian clothes came along, and he said, what happened actually? Questioned me, and he said, why are you coming over this hill? So I told him, and I said, told him what I've told you just now. And so he said, oh, they can't understand it. Can't I get another way around the hill? So I said, no, that's the nearest way. I was getting very frustrated. So he said, well, I'll tell you something, one of them said. If you come with me and you don't look right and left, he said, we'll take you to a certain place right up to the top, and then you find your way back. So I didn't know what he meant. So a few steps later, on the left-hand side, there was this great big, well, barbed wire it was, and there were people behind it. And as you know, I had this man on either side, and he made sure I wasn't turning my head. But you can see when you go along, and I could see they were Jews. They were Jews, you see. And so I walked along, and one of the men was smoking a cigarette, and he just sort of threw it over the fence, and there were over half a dozen people were rushing after that cigarette. And so they chatted to me very, very nice, very friendly, very nicely. And I could see people in civilian clothes, men and women, sitting in the woods. It was a lovely evening. And then he came to the end of this barbed wire, and he said to me, one of them said to me, now you're going to reach whatever the station in few, it's only about 2 or 3 miles. But whatever you've seen here, you must never, ever tell anybody what you have seen. He said, I know you could see a little bit, but you don't know what it is, but don't ever mention it. And do you know, I never did mention it, but what it was actually, it must have been a transit camp for the concentration camp, because these people were waiting. Now, nobody ever, so even during these, I was talking to people about Annaberg, and I said to, we were talking about pilgrimage because people came from the other end. Nobody ever knew that on the other side of this little hill, there was this sort of a, perhaps I should think transit camp for a concentration camp. And they were definitely Jews. And because I could see a lot of them wore sort of a white and black striped shirts. But what I mean to emphasize was, I don't think a lot of German did know. I mean, we were so nearby. We were only about 8 miles from Annaberg. Now, you would have thought so many people go over that hill and so. But it was probably cordoned off and said, don't keep out or something like that. But nobody knew it was there. Nobody ever did know that was there. So that's so it's only just a way of talking, of saying. A lot of English people did say, oh, the people must have known, especially if it was nearby. I don't think it was so well concealed. I don't think a lot of people did know what had happened. If they did know, they were like me, probably frightened into saying, don't say anything, if they had found out. But it was just one of those things which one remembers again.
What did you and the people with you think about the enemy countries like Britain and France and Russia?
We didn't, well, I can only, because my father, being a Catholic, and he wasn't going to have politics discussed with us, he thought, because we were too young and we were children. He did go for bridge evenings with friends twice a week and did no doubt discuss it. But I will say there was never any hatred, anything disagree. It was talked to that as the war progressed. That's how it was. That's what we had been fed to through the papers, and we had to accept wherever they went to and were defeated, or the enemy was defeated. But I will say that never anybody whom I know had any sort of saying, we dislike, we hate these people. I have never heard. And in fact, knowing my father's family, we always have said we started the war, and we always have said it right out to the end. Whatever happened to us, we deserved it because we started the war. I think we were much more saying it was us who started it and not anybody else. And that has, I've heard from any my family and from even a lot of my friends. But as I say, it wasn't so much discussed because we were still young, and my father didn't discuss a lot of politics with us. As we were three girls, you see, you were just, that wasn't discussed. Politics were for men, really. I don't think even with my mother, it was much more for my men. But I will say, I've never, also in school or so, we have never been instilled hatred, never instilled saying, oh, they and what they have done. I've never come across it, not in my surroundings, not in my life.
Not even about the Versailles Treaty?
Yes, it has been mentioned in school, because it has been mentioned that we had been told, as one of part of the history, that had been told about all these points. And it said that it was unjust, the Treaty of Versailles, wasn't it?
Yes.
And that what Hitler really was after to renounce to... Oh yes, we had been told about that, but that was part of the curriculum in school.
Was there any bombing of the area that you're in?
Not until 44. But see, again, we were so very lucky. They didn't find out, the Americans, I should think, more than the English, perhaps, that these V-1 and 2 bombers, which they were trying and bombed the whole of Germany to find it and couldn't, that they were actually by us. And they didn't find out until about July 44. And then they found out they were manufactured in that Oderberg, actually, that's near that Annaberg. And then they bombed us daily, bombed them. But as we were on the other side, and it was an industrial area, and with us we never had any bombs at all. Not until. But as I had to go to the office to where I worked by train every day, 25 miles, and it was a bigger town in Goschstrelitz where I went to work. It was extraordinary, because although we all had shelters, underground shelters, you see, and we had such lovely summers. I remember that such a lovely hot summer. And 10 o'clock, suddenly for the very first time, and then it continued sort of on and off, the alarm, the sirens, rang. We had to go to the shelter. What did we do? We took our sun cream. We took our blankets and we all went out into the garden next to the shelter, and we all were lying down with our skirts hitched up, blouses taken off, and enjoyed the sunshine. And you could see, actually, because it's so flat and it wasn't all that far away, you could see the bombs dropping in Oderberg. And they did find the manufacturing of, where they were manufactured, the V1 and V2s, I think. And I remember one of these mornings, my boss came along. He was absolutely livid. And he said, that's not the idea to lie in the sun. He said,